we have that mindset of like trying to bend the natural world to what we want it to be. Instead, we should be learning to live alongside the community that we find ourselves in, you know, whether that's people or like the wildlife that already is there. You know, alligators and crocodiles are definitely not the monsters sometimes that people think they are. And I've spent time handling under permit and then also being underwater with both of them. It's not that there's no risk to some of that, you know, because they are wild animals, they are powerful. Having spent a lot of time with them and worked with them, you know, there are behavioral cues and things to do and not do when it comes to just living alongside them. There are so many things that we can do to do that safely.
We'll probably go out to the main river though for sure, because that's where most of the action is at. Have you done like a podcast episode thing before?
I've done one podcast before. I've had a couple, like, sometimes I have to like balance what all I do. I've had a couple people reach out to do podcasts. Haven't had time, but I'm excited about this one. Nice to be able to actually get outside and do it too.
Like a hawk.
Oh, nice.
A big part for me, and I feel like of the people that I've had out, they get really excited because it's like, not only is it, I'm going to get a video of this guy, look at him. Not only is it fun to do the podcast, but yeah, it's so cool. Nice. So pretty.
Yeah.
But yeah, of the people that I've had out, they get excited knowing that like they get to do a podcast and it's not just in a studio and...
Right. This just feels more natural to me because yeah. This is where I would be normally anyway.
Exactly. So. Well, that's kind of the goal is to have people who this is kind of like what they do. And it also makes it a little bit more fun to watch. You watch on YouTube, do like the video podcast thing. But go ahead and kind of like introduce yourself and just very briefly like what you do.
So my name is Joseph Ricketts. My full-time job is I'm a crocodilian research biologist. Work with alligators and crocodiles around the state. What I'm really passionate about is wildlife photography and videography. So I do a lot of underwater photography and filming. I think I'm probably most known for some of my night stuff. I do a lot of things in Florida Springs at night. Mostly I've been focusing on freshwater photography right now, but I'll go anywhere I can with my camera.
That's awesome. So yeah, you predominantly focus on freshwater. Is that if you're doing photography and videography, you need to have visibility. So I would assume if you were ever doing like anything saltwater, you're probably down in like more South Florida area. I mean, do you go out there often, or is it mostly like the springs?
So mostly the springs. Yeah, I think it's kind of circumstantial. I'm mostly a freshwater photographer. I've been doing photography since like 2018. I mean, when I was like 12 years old, it was the first time I picked up a camera and really enjoyed it. But like 2018 was when I was like, I'm gonna do this a little more seriously. Well, I could tell a little bit of like how I got into underwater photography.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the most unique parts of my story. So I mean, like most people, I started out with a GoPro underwater. In college, my friends and I wouldn't really party. We mostly on spring break we would go down to Florida to snorkel.
Where did you go to school at? So you're not in Florida.
So I went to school. It was a small school in Northwest Georgia on Lookout Mountain called
nice.
Covenant College.
Covenant.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, I actually have friends who went to Covenant.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of people.
It's like a small Christian school.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So we would, I'll just come down to Florida and yeah, we'd seen like photos and videos of the clear water. One time we made all the way to the Everglades. And so every spring break we'd just come to Florida and we had GoPros and oh, nice. Cormorant turtle.
Yeah.
Double action.
There's always something on that log right there.
Yeah, I'm prime spot. Who wouldn't be?
I got nice, good sun coverage there.
I really fell in love with it and really wanted to get my actual camera underwater, but the cost of like underwater housing and equipment was just like, I have no idea how I will ever be able to pull this off.
Yep.
But then, you know, a few years later, I got a job in Gainesville. Working for the National Ecological Observatory Network. It's kind of a mouthful, but anyway, I was here in Gainesville and I was like, you know, diving the springs a lot. And I was like, I have to figure this out. I got to get my camera underwater. So I started cruising around on Facebook Marketplace and I found a way to like alter the URL so that you could search like an even wider radius than normal.
For
underwater housings. So I just started looking and I found one that was made for a camera that was like 20 years older than mine. It was like a dinosaur housing and it was like a tenth of the cost of what they normally are. And it, I mean, it came with like a dome, not a dome port, but a lens port, strobes, and like everything. And
dang,
I was like trying to compare. It was like for the Canon D60, not even the 60D, but the D60.
Okay.
And I was using a 6D Mark II at the time. I had to like compare the sizes of the cameras, and they were like within millimeters of each other. So I like took a risk and got it. I ended up using Lego pieces to like alter the housing to fit my camera, but
it
worked.
That's crazy.
And like that was how I got a camera underwater for the first time. And I mean,
that's insane.
I did pretty well with it. I
did the buttons and like, cause I know obviously, I guess depending on the housing that you have, like the buttons have to line up and stuff
right
on the back so you can use the functions and
so
stuff.
So I could use shutter speed. I had auto ISO on and then like,
yeah,
you know, aperture control, and then I could pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I could only like do video or photo. Like I'd have to start out with that.
So you couldn't switch while
you were
underwater.
I couldn't switch in the middle of it.
Okay.
And also if I did video, I would have to like be recording the entire time.
Okay. So you couldn't start and stop the recording.
Yeah. So
dang.
Definitely some limitations, but I mean, I still made some photos.
Hey,
that won
some
competitions.
You got your camera underwater. Yeah. Oh, you made, that's,
yeah,
that's so cool.
So I like wasn't just like surviving. I was actually doing pretty well. And then it was kind of like, all right, this is not just like an, oh, nice gator.
Yeah.
Not just like something I'm going to be sort of interested in. Like this is a passion. And so
yeah,
I then started I got a used housing next, and then recently, you know, upgraded my full kit. And so that was a pretty cool milestone to finally hit.
What do you shoot with now?
So now I'm still using the same old strobes, but yeah, I'm shooting with a Canon R5 and an Ike Light setup.
You'd probably be obviously a really good person to talk to about camera underwater housing stuff. Like I know nothing about it, but kind of similar. I would love to get into it.
Yeah.
And
The
only like housing that I've looked into that is not like an insane amount of money is it's like called Sea Frogs. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those.
Okay. Then you have like Aquatech, right? Or no. What is Aquatech?
Yeah, Aquatech is one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you have like Nauticam, and you have
Nauticam is top of the line.
Yeah. I mean, but then
twice as much as my camera almost.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I would love to get my camera. I mean, I don't have anything super, like I have I shoot mirrorless Sony.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like the Sony A7C because
nice.
I like to travel. I like to have stuff like lightweight and packable.
Yep.
So that's why I went with like the compact, the C series.
Yeah.
I really wanted the A7R, I think. I don't remember.
A7CR?
No, not the C.
I
think it's just the A7R.
Okay.
It just has like the higher resolution.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted that for a while. And then I was like, I'm just going to go with kind of the compact because it does a little bit of both and it shoots 4K. And it's a pretty solid.
There's so many little baby cormorants.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Those are in Hinga.
Are those in Hinga babies? Okay.
The ones down low, yeah, you can see the white like newborn feathers on them. They're actually like directly below that.
Oh, yeah, well, there's
female
the
alligator.
There. There's mom.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is Wilma is what we call her. And she has like two or three little babies, and they're normally on this kind of funky looking tree to the far right, the log at the base of it. They're normally hanging out right over there. And but I don't see them right now. I mean, sometimes they just move around, but that's typically where they're at.
Nice.
Yeah. I feel like obviously doing what you do with the alligator research, crocodilian research, you probably, I mean, do you get excited when you see alligators, like, every time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
Right now, I feel like it changes. My current favorite animal changes, but my current favorite animal is American crocodile.
Okay.
Because we recently have been doing some work with them. But, yeah, I mean, I always get excited. They're such amazing animals.
Yeah. I think when I'm out here on the river and I'm, like, guiding, and you may share a lot of this as well, but I think it's like the fact that they have the potential to take you out, but yeah, they're such interesting animals and just the species as a whole, like they're just so like resilient and they're,
ancient.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just how long just the species has been around for and, they're insane animals and I don't know. I love seeing them and I don't know, I'd probably get closer than I should sometimes, but
they're one of my favorite parts about living in Florida is just knowing you don't have to go that far to see a dinosaur if you want to.
Yeah.
It's pretty special.
So you're saying you're right now, you're currently doing stuff with the American crocodile. I guess, what does that look like if you're able to talk about that and so, like the research that you do?
The project that we'd been working on most recently was, or that I got a chance to help out with, was project tracking crocodiles in urban context in South Florida. A lot of people don't know that Florida has alligators and crocodiles natively in the state. There's only about 2,500 adult crocodiles estimated in the state.
Okay.
When, you know, we have like 1.5 million plus alligators in the state. So huge difference. And crocodiles are a federally threatened species.
Okay.
So they are protected. But the population is actually doing well. So it is growing. And then, of course, everyone knows Florida's population is also growing at an incredibly fast rate. With both those growing populations, there's just anticipation that there will be more human-wildlife conflict.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stems from just lack of education and people knowing American crocodiles exist here, and then also their behavior. Because people see a crocodile in salt water and think, oh, it's a saltwater crocodile, but that species lives in the Indo-Pacific and like Australia and has totally different size, totally different behavior. Ours tend to be very shy and not want anything to do with people. And there's, you know, plenty of ways to safely coexist with them. There's just a big need for education on that. Our study is looking at how they navigate, because they are present in some pretty surprisingly urban contexts. One of the coolest wildlife experiences I had on that job was, you know, being down in Miami and right off the Miami skyline, you know, there's a crocodile in this like clear water, and just that contrast of this ancient reptilian creature right beside the epicenter of like urbanism in Florida, and just such a cool contrast, and that animal's able to like successfully survive there. So we're looking at how do they navigate those environments so that we can help, you know, mitigate and like prevent conflict in the future. Just so we have a better understanding of their behavior.
That's really, really cool. So, I mean, do you regularly make trips to different parts of the state to do,
we set out like 15 tags on 15 different animals, and that's been done. But the past couple of years, we were making quite a few trips around South Florida trying to get those out. But it's a big team of different groups working on the project, so it wasn't all just me, but I was able to help out in a lot of different areas on that, which is really cool.
I feel that there's a lot of, kind of going back to a lack of education that you were mentioning before, I get a lot of people that even just come out here on the river for a tour that they don't even know that there is a difference between a crocodile and an alligator, and that they're completely different species, and that they have different mannerisms and different ways that they hunt, that they, like they're not the same animal by any means. And then just you saying that, like you have the American crocodile, and then you have the Nile crocodile, which is very different from the one that you're going to find in Australia. And I don't know if there's like a quick, easy way to put that, but just the lack of education, and like what would be a good way to learn other than just like going home and Googling a bunch of stuff? I mean, how would you, I guess, have somebody get into that space where they want to maybe learn more?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely plenty of online resources. I know the state has a lot, you know, a lot of the universities have plenty of resources, just kind of like I'm differentiating between the two. And it's one of those things too, where even if people don't really know how to tell them apart, when you see a crocodile, you just know it looks different. And I think that's where some of the fear comes, is people see it and they know it's different than an alligator, but they don't really have a context for where to place it.
Okay.
And however much knowledge they have about crocodiles just kind of like automatically fills that gap, and most of what people know about crocodiles are, you know, like Niles.
There's another one.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
Yeah,
a little bigger.
Yeah,
but yeah, like Nile crocodiles taking down wildebeests, or you know, the saltwater crocodiles Steve Irwin worked with, you know, they're the biggest crocodilians in the world. So, and that's very different than our American crocs here in Florida.
When you hear about these like horror stories of I mean, especially in Florida, because going back to just how we have to how they have to coexist with us, but that, like, I mean, you saw the other day that the lady had this 8-foot alligator in her kitchen. Did you see that?
I didn't actually see that one.
Yeah.
I need to look that up, apparently.
Yeah, it was a video that just went viral probably like 3 or 4 days ago. So like you have situations like that, and then you have like the really sad and unfortunate interactions where like this is years ago, but the little kid at Disney World.
Who, right, yeah.
People are just absolutely terrified by alligators, and like they are apex predators. Like mm-hmm. you have to have that respect, and you have to... especially when it comes to like smaller pets and children, you really have to be on your guard and float, right. Especially by a body of water where alligators could be. Talk, because obviously you're in the water a lot with them. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about like your interactions and experience with being in the water with an alligator or a crocodile. Yeah.
It's easy to, like those incidences, you know, they have that kind of viral capacity to them.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because there is like, I don't know why, but sometimes, you know, we're kind of drawn to that like tragedy mm-hmm. and that relationship with virality is unfortunate. But in reality though, those incidences are few and far between compared to, I don't know, like, you know, we think people are all nervous about Florida because of alligators, but honestly, the most dangerous thing any of us do any day is get in the car and drive anywhere.
Yep.
And if you are afraid of Florida for any reason, it should be because of like I-4, I-75, and like Highway 90. But so I think it's easy to kind of blow those things out of proportion. But a lot of times, you know, it is tied to that issue of a lot of people who, you know, are moving to Florida because maybe our climate, that's a whole thing itself, when you mm-hmm. have climate change and yeah. there being less space for people to move to Florida. But, you know, sometimes those people move here, but if they're not taking the time to learn about the natural communities that already exist here,
yep.
you know, including learning that alligators and crocodiles are going to be your new neighbors, that's an issue. And that's where I think a lot of that, when you have that lack of education, you know, that's kind of when problems can arise. And I think that was tied to that issue with that kid at Disney. I believe that that family was not from here and they were out in an area at sunset, which is when alligators are more active,
yeah.
and with a small child, and you know that's when really, really unfortunate things happen. But if you have that education, and so I think that's a really important thing is for, you know, we sometimes think, you know, we have that mindset of like trying to bend the natural world to what we want it to be. Instead, we should be learning to live alongside the community that we find ourselves in. You know, whether that's people or like the wildlife that already is there. All that to say, you know, alligators and crocodiles are definitely not the monsters sometimes that people think they are. And I've spent time handling under permit and then also being underwater with both of them. I mean, it's not that there's no risk to some of that, you know, because they are wild animals, they are powerful. Having spent a lot of time with them and worked with them, you know, there are behavioral cues and things to do and not do, you know, that can make it interacting with them. It's such a close place, there's ways to make that safer when it comes to just living alongside them. There are so many things that we can do to do that safely. And again, you know, we compared to, you know, like America is the only place in the world where, or the US, where alligators are like the normal crocodilian type, but yeah. most of the rest of the world deals with crocodiles.
Yeah.
And you know, they're the ones who actually have the challenge, the people that are having to live alongside salties and
it's
Niles.
Very, very different.
Or
the American alligator,
crocodiles.
The American alligator is like...
It's a very, like, doable when it comes to living alongside it. And
yeah.
there are, obviously, like, accidents that do happen.
Yeah.
But, like, it's very, very
tragic,
possible.
Yeah.
And there are lots of things, steps you can take to make living with them safe.
I don't know if you probably have seen the viral videos, probably... 4 or 5 years ago now, with that lady who was on the paddleboard that had that alligator approaching her. Have you seen that video?
Yeah, I did.
And that I know, I mean, I don't know for that situation. I know that there has been another situation where you would have different government organizations that'll come out and start doing like a removal of mm-hmm. like larger, potentially dangerous alligators out here. And it's a permanent removal. Yeah, it's really sad because I don't know. Yeah, just share your thoughts on that if you.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously this is just my personal thoughts. I mean, yeah, I think it's sad when any...
He's actually up on the bank. You see him?
Oh, yeah. His tail just pulled over that root. That's awesome.
Check him out.
Yeah, I think it's sad when any animal gets removed, and I don't know the full context of that story. And that was kind of the, I mean, I don't think I had been coming out to Silver too much when that happened, because I think I was still in grad school at that point.
Okay.
But from that one video I saw, it just kind of looked like it got close, and the person in the video kind of seemed like they overreacted a little bit. But it's very easy to take animal behavior out of context, especially from an animal like that guy over there. I don't think the camera can see him, but I'll turn. That guy right there. So people that are, you know, afraid of these animals, sometimes their voice tends to be louder than the people who aren't. And that is where I think a lot of issues are. And I think sometimes, you know, people don't account for how much power their voice has. I think I've seen a few instances where, you know, the people who, you know, don't like how that interaction went and kind of want that animal removed, their voice gets heard. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of people who aren't happy about it. But if those people would speak up even more so in defense of what happens, you know, sometimes that can kind of change the outcome. And I think it can be, it is an uphill battle. Don't give up. I've seen where that can, like, change the outcome of those instances.
Talking about a different situation that did happen on this river is, I guess there were two ladies that were paddleboarding. I this is all just what I heard, so I don't actually know what happened, but they said that this alligator cornered them. I don't know how an alligator is cornering you unless you're like
on a river.
I mean, there are like little coves, but I mean, unless you're like, you have a turkey sandwich and you're like, hey buddy, and then he's like following you into that corner, like there's no way that alligator is cornering you. Obviously, like, they can change by how we interact with them. I mean, whether it's a fed alligator, which then does become dangerous. But I don't think in that situation that I'm referring to that alligator was being fed. I think it was just them feeling maybe slightly uncomfortable because they probably put themselves in a situation that wasn't ideal for them and what they were comfortable with. And so I think it just ended up, I thought this was a gator for a second, it's just a lot. It does kind of look like a small
log.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, that's an issue with other species as well. Cottonmouths is a, I'd heard so many times growing up, I mean, growing up in the South, like people do not like venomous snakes, which is really unfortunate because they're super cool. But like people saying cottonmouths are like super aggressive. And then I had a creek that had a huge population in them behind my house growing up as a kid. And I would just go down and like hang out with them. And I could stand like 3 feet away and they'd just sit there and look at me and, you know, no sign of aggression whatsoever.
Would they pose or no? I mean, I'm
they
sure
would
sometimes.
They wouldn't even like gape at me or anything.
Really?
Yeah, they'd just hang out.
Yeah.
I know sometimes they do that, but.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've, doing photography with alligators, you know, I've had times where I got pretty close to one and then it came towards me and, you know, I had to back up, and then it like looked like it was like rushing towards me, but then at the last second like diverted. In that context, you know, most people who don't have as much experience with them, or just like wouldn't take the time, or just trying to sensationalize that moment, you know, would like be like, it totally charged
me. The thing was coming after me.
But then, like, I thought about the scenario, and I realized like it was in a shallow like floodplain, and it was trying to get to this culvert to go under a road. And I was in that path, and I didn't realize it. And it was just trying to, like, you know, it was, like, being brave, like, coming towards me because it just wanted to get past me to go under that culvert to deeper water.
Okay.
And, like, a lot of times, you know, when people say, like, oh, this animal, like came at me, there's just a lot of context that's missing. And, like, some animals, like, I mean, animals can do, like, they're living creatures. They can make decisions and do things that we don't expect them to do. So, like, sure, sometimes things do happen, but it's always important to take those things with a grain of salt because there's more often than not the behavior is just getting taken out of context.
Exactly. So now kind of getting into like your photography and what you said you're more like truly passionate about is doing that. Where would you like that to go? Like if you could have any opportunity present itself to you with doing your underwater photography, like where would you want to be with that if you could kind of do that?
So I think what I'm really interested in right now is like wildlife filmmaking. You know, I love science, and that's what I'm a wildlife biologist, so that's kind of what I'm academically trained for. But, you know, a lot of times sometimes the most important part of scientific work is not always the science itself, but is communicating that science to the public. And I think having compelling like video and photos is a huge part of that. And so I'm really interested in doing wildlife filmmaking and scientific storytelling, using my passion for science and art to kind of help build bridges between people and wildlife. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of starting a couple projects on that. So I've been working out in Florida Springs at night a lot in the past like 6 months now, I guess. I haven't released the image yet, but I'm planning to soon. But I've been trying to, so a lot of times as a photographer, sometimes I think about what is something that, like, how can I take an image of these animals that are photographed a lot, but do it in a unique way?
Yeah.
So I've been trying to get a split shot of manatees underneath the night sky.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
So I've done it. I got the shot.
Okay.
Just kind of trying to work through some groups that were helping me get that to release that pretty soon. But I want to do kind of a film of just that whole process of like capturing that film and like my experiences in the spring at night.
So you're trying to give a story and context to that photo. Okay.
But then another project that I'm really excited about that's going to probably take another year or so, but I'm working on a film that's looking at human-crocodile relationships in South Florida. I'm kind of diving into that kind of, just all the like crazy variety of views on crocodiles, you know, because there's people who hate them, people who love them, people who don't care.
Yeah.
And people who have very different opinions on how they should be managed and protected. That's something I've been working on and I'm really, really excited about. We share more about in the next few months.
What has been probably your most memorable like wildlife interaction, I guess, whether it was above or underwater, with your photography?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's so many. So I guess part of that, like when I was working on getting that photo of manatees under the night sky, I spent a lot of time and a lot of really late and long nights in the spring and was able to see some really cool things, including like alligators, you know, hanging out around manatees, which, you know, is not something everyone, and we all know it happens, but like being there when it happens.
Yeah, to observe it is different.
Getting to see that and then also having it happen at night was just really cool. You know, a big goal of mine this past year was to get video and photos of American crocodiles underwater, which, you know, there's not a lot of them. It's very challenging to find them, but I was able to do that actually last month, kind of as the first step on that film project I've been working on. So that was like, that was a huge, huge moment for me. Just there had been so much work going into finding a good spot where it was possible to get the shot and then actually happening. Yeah, that was huge. So those are two that stand out recently. But
is the manatee in the night sky.
Yeah.
And then the crocodile.
The crocodile, yeah.
So walk me through your like thought process with, I mean, again, you are very trained and experienced in being in and around the water with crocodilians. So I mean, this is definitely not something that anybody should ever
do. It's not advice.
Yes. But
yeah.
So walk me through your thought process. So like you're in the water and you have an alligator 20 feet away from you and you're trying to get, I mean, I know looking at a lot of your photos, I don't know if you have different lenses that you take into the water, or if you have like one main one that you kind of stick with, but I do know that you're, I mean, whether it's
the fish eyes kind of go to.
Well, yeah, whether it's the refraction in the water, but either way, in order to get like an actual crisp, like detailed shot of an alligator, I mean, you have to get within a few feet from it.
Sometimes you have to be pretty close.
Walk me through your like thought process on like approaching a shot like that.
So I definitely have to say again, disclaimer, is not advice, and I don't recommend people swim with crocodilians because of the things that can happen. And even though I have a lot of knowledge behind, like, and experience behind me, like, there still is a risk. There's definitely times where, so the first thing is just, like, looking at the alligator, monitoring its behavior. You know, if it, like, shows any sign of being comfortable with people, that's kind of big red flag.
Okay.
Just because it may have been fed, and fed alligators associate people with food, and you know, it can just kind of be
more likely
a bad
to
scenario.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even like, you know, an exploratory bite from an animal that's that powerful could be bad. Seeing if it's like kind of not showing that it's signs that it's been fed, and then also like just within a certain size. If you look at the bite data in Florida, and there's a surprisingly small amount compared to, you know, other everyday hazards you face. But of course they do happen. But most of those tend to be, especially like fatal bites, tend to be from larger individuals.
Okay.
So there's a size limit where it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to draw the line here.
Yeah.
We're going to leave this guy be and not attempt to get a photo or anything. That actually happened
recently.
The other night I was with a friend and we were in a spring and saw an alligator and we're like, let's try and get a closer look, and got a little bit closer, still like probably 50 feet away, and we're like, nope, that one's too big. We're gonna let him be.
Yeah. Gotta move on to the next one.
Move on. So and then like,
so what,
having
walk,
a dive buddy
me.
Is also super important.
Yeah,
and
having
and
a dive buddy.
People know your plans for going out and coming back, all that.
But okay, so you're in the water, and you've confirmed that it is a safe size that you are comfortable with photographing. Walk me through like your mental approach to that. Again, so you said like whether they are kind of have they're displaying that they're like more comfortable could potentially mean that it's been fed, which would then make him dangerous. But so okay, so he's not, doesn't look like he's been fed, he looks like he's still pretty like wild and not interacting with people. Walk through that.
My goal, of course, is like a photographer, is I want to capture like natural behavior, you know. So I don't want to have an impact on the wildlife, you know. I want them to stay like as they are. So trying to get close as possible without like causing them to like, you know, get up and shift their position, but I don't want them to like actively flee from me, you know, ever, because that's never the goal. So just like kind of letting, you know, approach from where they can easily see me, of course, and then just, you know, gentle movements underwater, nothing like fast or anything. And
I mean, if it's a smaller alligator, one, you don't want to like mess up their normal movement and routine and whatever they're doing, but also you don't want to come across as a predatory animal to him and to where they're going to flee and
So just like a gentle approach, and you know, I have my camera out in front of me, which, you know, acts kind of almost as a shield,
a barrier,
which is nice. But and then
does he have a crab? Like the bowfin down there, he's either got trash or like a
it does kind of look like a crab, but I could not tell.
What the heck is that? I mean, I've never seen any. He's right here. I can't tell. Maybe you can look through the kayak. He's going to be timing under you.
Okay. It's in like the head of a fish.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Is this the spines were throwing us off?
That's so cool.
Well, good eating for the bowfin.
Yeah.
They are predators, so.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No,
it looked like a big chunk of trash in his mouth. I was like, what the heck does he got in his mouth?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's about it. Yeah, it's just, I think sometimes, you know, when you get into water with the camera, it can be easy to just focus on the shot, but it's important to balance, you know, like having a minimal impact on the wildlife around you. And when you do that, your photos and videos turn out a lot better because, you know, the animals are behaving as they normally would.
Photography in general, just the access of really good, high quality videos and photos, people, just because of social media, I mean, people kind of just assume that like, oh, anybody can do that, or it's not hard to do. Where, I mean, if you have a photo next to the crocodile that, like you're focused on your equipment, your settings on your equipment, you're focused on the safety of yourself, you're focused on the safety of the wildlife, you're focusing on trying not to like disturb them. So I mean, like it's way more in depth than just hopping in the water. I mean, whether it's a crocodilian or another animal, a manatee, that obviously you're not as worried about being in the water with.
Yeah.
There's a lot more that goes into it than people think.
Yeah.
And it's, much deeper.
Not something I recommend without lots and lots and lots of experience.
Exactly. One more question before we get to the close here. So
okay.
Talking, so you're saying lots and lots of experience. What is your background experience? So other than just like sitting in a classroom and mm-hmm. learning about it, I mean, that can't be the only experience had. I mean, you don't just go from reading a book and then you jump in the water with an alligator and now you know how to interact. Right. And so how, like, what experience do you have and like what?
I mean, I have my undergrad degree is in environmental biology. I also have a master's in biology as well. And then through all of that, you know, I've had a lot of different experiences working with wildlife, had an internship in Costa Rica and
that's cool.
Got to work with, it was like pretty diverse internship. You know, I haven't just worked with crocodilians. I've always been interested in reptiles and amphibians.
Okay.
In grad school, I did surveys for reptiles and amphibians on the Gulf Coast National Seashore, kind of partnered between my university and National Park Service. I also have done a lot of work I did a lot of volunteer stuff locally in Gainesville, the greater Gainesville area, with the turtle surveys.
Okay.
So, you know, snorkeling and capturing all the different freshwater turtle species, including, you know, larger snapping turtles as well.
Yeah.
And then I also volunteered with some biologists up in the Panhandle doing amphibian surveys and then also snake capture and release surveys as well.
Nice.
There's more, but that's all I can think of at the moment.
I got you.
But yeah, so between, you know, all those experiences and then my academic background, that's kind of where I ended up in my current position, and then have, through that position, gotten a lot more experience with crocodilians. But also been, you know, I've been doing a ton of like snorkeling, diving in Florida Springs for the past, I think 5 years is kind of when I've really, really been focusing on it. But yeah, and not just the springs, but you know, a lot of Blackwater rivers in Florida and
I haven't been brave enough to start venturing out into.
I mean, Blackwater is scary.
Fine with like paddling it, but like getting in the water to me, I mean, I'll take a dip, but like I'm not like, oh, let me throw on a wetsuit and like swim around for a little bit. Like that's for me. I haven't gotten to that level of crazy yet, but I'll paddle them. I'm not a fan of getting
just 3 feet visibility and then like blackness surrounding you.
So
it's I mean different. I love it, but it's definitely scary. It's like my heart's beating so fast.
But does it ever get easier?
It does get a little easier, but and having someone with you, so one of my friends Bill Hawthorne,
he does stuff out here with turtles.
He was working on photographing alligator snapping turtles, and that was where we were doing some stuff in the Suwannee, and that was crazy because you'd dive down like 15 feet and it's like pitch black, but also you can still kind of see like a glowing glowing 3 feet in front of you, but then like all of a sudden you come up on this like 100-pound like, you know, monster turtle, and man, that was a awesome experience. But
I haven't met Bill, but well, I have met him in passing out here, but I haven't like officially sat down and like had a conversation with him.
Yeah.
He seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah, he is. He's also a great photographer as well.
Yeah, yeah. To wrap it up, how can people find you?
Yeah.
With different like social channels that you are on?
Yeah. So I'm most active right now on Instagram. I'm starting to try and do some more longer form content on YouTube.
Okay.
And then I have a TikTok, but I'm kind of like, since I'm mostly shooting with Instagram in mind, like TikTok has not been
the platforms are very different.
One,
yeah, but, you have to.
But
yeah.
I'm on all three, so whichever one you're most active on.
What and
free
how?
To follow me
what?
On.
What do people?
Oh yeah, Joseph Ricketts Photo on all of them.
Okay, Joseph Ricketts Photo. Got it. Yep. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming out, Joseph.
Yeah, of course,
I appreciate
Josh.
It.
This
it was awesome hanging out and getting to learn a little bit about your story. So
yeah.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
For having me.
Cool. Well, have a good one.
All right.